Iran's parliament speaker calls for firm response to the assassination of a prominent Iranian nuclear and defense scientist. A car bomb attack targeting an army base in the eastern Afghan province of Ghazni leaves at least 30 people dead. The highest court in the U.S. state of Pennsylvania deals yet another blow to President Trump's attempt to overturn the presidential election results. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. Good to have you with us. Starting with a reaction by Iran's parliament speaker, who has called for a firm response to the assassination of prominent Iranian scientist, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh.
The criminal enemy will not regret its action unless faced with a strong reaction, which will both serve as a deterrent against the enemy's possible future mistakes and take revenge on them for this recent crime.
Ghalibov says that relevant bodies should not only take revenge, they should also turn this tragic event into an opportunity to become stronger on different economic, security, defense, and nuclear fronts. He also called for avoiding any signal that would suggest weakness against or trust in the U.S. political system. International condemnations keep pouring in over the assassination of the Iranian scientist. The latest reaction came from U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders, who slammed the targeted killing as reckless, provocative, and illegal. The Democratic politician warned the deadly attack was clearly intended to undermine U.S.-Iran diplomacy. A spokesman for the U.N. Secretary General also condemned what it called the extrajudicial killing. Also, the U.N. Special Rapporteur on extrajudicial executions said that Fakhrizadeh's assassination is in violation of international human rights law. The European Union blasted as a criminal act the assassination and said that it ran counter to the principle of respect for human rights. Also, the Turkish Foreign Ministry called for the perpetrators to be held accountable for the heinous crime. The assassination of the Iranian top nuclear scientist has drawn condemnation from Iranian people from all walks of life, and capital Tehran, a rally was held to slam the terrorist attack. Yusuf Jalali has a report.
2:30 p.m. local time on Friday, in a countryside area east of Tehran, a truck loaded with explosives blew up to intercept car carrying top Iranian nuclear scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. Eyewitnesses say five or six gunmen then rushed from a nearby vehicle and opened fire on his car. Fakhrizadeh was seriously injured and taken to hospital, but medics were unable to save his life. The incident immediately sent its shockwaves across Iran and beyond, with Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif calling the attack an act of terror and linking it to Israel. Inside Iran, the assassination comes as a shock. Less than 24 hours after the incident, people from all walks of life gathered here outside the Iranian parliament to condemn the assassination, which they view as grave as the U.S.'s assassination of top IRGC commander Qasem Soleimani in January.
What happened to our nuclear scientist was carried out by the same terrorists who killed Qasem Soleimani. Like Mr. Soleimani, Fakhrizadeh offered many services to our nation.
If we back down on this terrorist act, the U.S. and Israel will become more insolent towards us. We have gathered here to urge the government and lawmakers to take a tough stance towards the perpetrators to avoid further such incidents.
Fakhrizadeh served as the head of the Research and Innovation Organization of the Defense Ministry. Iranian officials say he had a long history in defense innovations and had made key efforts to promote Iran's nuclear energy program.
Remember that name, Fakhrizadeh.
This had made him the number one target of Israel's intelligence services, which have a track record of targeted killings of Iranian nuclear scientists nearly a decade ago.
Israel is not willing to see Iran's advancement in science and technology. It killed four other Iranian nuclear scientists, and now it assassinated Mr. Fakhrizadeh. But Israel should know that it cannot stop Iran's peaceful nuclear program, because those martyrs have trained numerous young scientists who will take the lead in this field.
Observers say the assassination of the Iranian scientist comes as part of Israel's attempts to disrupt Iran's nuclear energy program, which Tel Aviv accuses of having military dimensions. Iran has time and again dismissed such allegations and signed the 2015 nuclear deal with the world powers as a sign of goodwill.
Fakhrizadeh now becomes the fifth Iranian nuclear scientist who was eliminated in a terror attack. While all indications attest to an Israeli involvement, Iranians here demand that the government take a harsh revenge. This, they say, would reduce the chances of more Iranian scientists becoming an easy target for terrorists. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
From the Lebanese capital, Beirut, I'm joined by Jamal Hakim, professor of the Lebanese International University. Good to have you with us. Professor Hakim, let's have your assessment of the assassination event and what incentive could be behind this, and also tell us about the timing.
Of the assassinated scientist, and at the same time to the Iranian people, I believe that this comes as an attempt to escalate the situation by Israel at the time when their fiercest ally, Donald Trump, had lost the elections, and they want to escalate the situation before he hands over power to Joe Biden, because the new administration, it seems that it might be relatively distant from Israeli aspirations of escalation as compared to the Trump administration. So that's why I believe that this assassination wants to draw a reaction from Iran, which would put the United States in a state of, to react to the Iranian reaction and escalate the situation throughout the Middle East. This is what the Israelis have in mind.
Okay, thank you very much for your comment. Jamal Hakim, professor at the Lebanese International University from Beirut. At least 30 people have died in a car bomb attack in Afghanistan's eastern Ghazni province. More than a dozen others also were injured in that attack that happened on the outskirts of Ghazni's capital. The Interior Ministry says an assailant detonated a vehicle full of explosives near an army base. Local officials saying that all the victims were security personnel. No claim of responsibility yet. The attack is one of the bloodiest targeting Afghan forces in recent months. And this while the government and the Taliban militant group are engaged in talks for a lasting peace agreement. Nine other news. The highest court of the U.S. state of Pennsylvania has dismissed another lawsuit aimed at overturning the November 3rd presidential election results. The court unanimously rejected the suit filed by Republican supporters of President Donald Trump. It claimed Pennsylvania's decision to allow absentee voting on demand was illegal. The justices noted the suit was filed months after the expiration of a time limit, allowing for challenges to the state's mail-in voting law. Meanwhile, Trump promised to challenge the Wisconsin vote count after a recount there. Trump said that we have found many illegal votes. He's been contesting the results of the election that suggests his Democratic rival Joe Biden is the winner. Let's move on with the rest of this broadcast from Tehran. The number of COVID-19 infections in the U.S. has surpassed the grim milestone of 13 million. Some 266,000 people also died of the disease. That's while a record number of 91,000 people were hospitalized in a single day on Saturday. The United States is the worst-hit country in the world and across the Americas. Brazil is the second hardest-hit nation on the continent. It's reported a daily caseload of 52,000 infections and 600 deaths. The Latin American country has reported 6.3 million cases and more than 172,000 fatalities. The coronavirus pandemic is surging across Europe, where countries are reporting more cases and deaths. Italy registered 26,000 infections and 700 deaths. The country, which is the second worst hit nation on the continent after Britain, has posted more than 1.5 million infections and 54,000 fatalities. In the UK, the number of infections rose by 16,000, while the deaths increased by 500. Turkey has also registered more than 30,000 infections and a record number of 182 fatalities. In Greece, the number of daily infections rose by more than 1,700. The deaths rose by a record number of 121. Now, in the UK, police have clashed with protesters rallying against the government's coronavirus restrictions in London. Police said they've arrested scores of people as they try to break up anti-lockdown and anti-vaccine protests. The arrests were made for different offenses, including assaulting a police officer, possession of drugs, and breaching coronavirus restrictions. Police lined up in a number of streets in London's West End shopping district and confronted crowds of ralliers in St. James Park near Westminster. The anti-lockdown demonstrators were joined by groups who oppose a COVID-19 vaccine. Let's now take a look at France. People there have taken to the streets against a new law that would restrict sharing images of police officers, and this only days after the country was shaken by footage showing officers beating and racially abusing a black man. Our correspondent has more from Paris.
A human tide, rarely seen, flooded in the streets of Paris and all over France in a freedom march against a new security law. The massive protest is held against President Macron's government that is pushing a new bill that restricts the ability to film police. Human rights associations and media are unanimous. This law would allow police brutality to go undiscovered and unpunished.
There's a huge popular opposition against this law. Even the Human Rights Commission of the United Nations and other international bodies criticize it. A social majority in this country refuses the implementation of this law. Since a long time, we alert the government on police brutality and violence against women. Violence against women during the lockdown is exploding, and the government remains inactive and guilty.
Two major events this week plead in favor of the protesters and of the importance of video footage to denounce police violence. First, French police dismantled a migrant camp in central Paris. The French government ordered an internal police investigation after police officers were filmed tossing migrants out of tents and intentionally tripping one while evacuating a protest camp.
It is important to film this kind of situations because it's part of freedom of expression. Filming with our phones is almost the only way of publishing this kind of violence against migrants, people from the suburb, against everybody.
And then a second video showed the violent arrest of a black music producer in Paris. Three police officers repeatedly punched and hit him during 20 minutes. The man told that the officers made racist insults.
Thanks to the images showing the beating by a kind of private militia attacking a music producer, the truth has come out. Without this video footage from a surveillance camera, the man would be in prison accused for using violence against the police. That shows the importance of having a counterpower in this country.
Under a huge pressure, Interior Minister Darmanin announced disciplinary proceedings as soon as possible, but that might be too little, too late. In the meantime, the protest is going on. A large majority in the French parliament voted in favor of the security law, but the Senate still has to approve it. Right-wing senators, a majority in the Senate, declared they will rewrite the law because it is unconstitutional. Chris Den Hont, Paris.
Religious leaders have called for greater efforts by EU authorities to tackle growing levels of Islamophobia and anti-Semitism across the 27-nation bloc. In a video conference organized by the EU Commission, they also criticized the EU's treatment of refugees. Jerome Hughes reports.
Despite the apparent demise of the Trump era, it is clear that the far-right movement in the West is still alive and well. White supremacy, racism, and xenophobia are problems in every EU country.
But this is the end! It's the end! Enough's enough!
Coordinated by the European Commission Brussels, religious leaders from all of the main faiths have just taken part in a video conference.
Reports of anti-Semitic and anti-Muslim attacks are now almost part of everyday life in our beloved Europe.
The leaders say the answer is to show more unity and greater mutual respect.
I want to say that if somebody hurts a Muslim sister, a Jewish brother, they are hurting me.
The European Union's much-criticized asylum policy also came under the spotlight during the event.
Europe loses its soul if we continue to watch people drowning in the Mediterranean. That is why we support civil rescue missions.
Religious leaders insist the European Union must do more to ensure refugees play a positive and productive role in society. Experts agree.
There were mistakes in integration of the migrants, and there were
mistakes in education, or lack of education, or lack of access to the educational system.
In the past, Saudi Arabia has been criticised for sponsoring terrorism in the EU. The European Commission says it is easier to brainwash vulnerable young men when they do not feel part of a community.
This sense of belonging would be the best shield against radicalization, terrorism, and hatred.
Work is continuing to try and curtail terrorist recruitment online in the EU. However, sociologists believe that is not the root cause of the security issue.
They say the source of the problem is not the internet, but the current climate within society. The focus should be on changing that, they argue. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Six explosions have been reported in the Eritrean capital, Asmara, with the cause and exact location of the blast remaining unclear. The U.S. Embassy in Asmara has confirmed the blast. Some diplomatic sources have been quoted as saying rockets were launched from neighboring Ethiopia's Tigray region, where rebels fighting central government consider Eritrea an archenemy. The Tigray People's Liberation Front previously fired rockets at Eritrea. They've been fighting the common forces since November the 4th. On Saturday, Ethiopian Prime Minister said that military operations in Tigray are complete after troops took control of the regional capital, Mekelle. Tigray fighters confirmed their withdrawal from the city. They have called on the international community to condemn what they describe as the government's massacre in the region. Indian-ruled Kashmir is heading to the polls for local elections amid beefed-up security. The first electoral process comes after New Delhi stripped the region of its autonomous status last year. Our correspondent has more.
After the abrogation of Kashmir's special status in August 2019, all electoral processes in the region were suspended and Kashmir came under the direct control of New Delhi. Also, the role of major pro-India political parties in Kashmir was belittled after New Delhi detained all pro-India politicians. The absence of people's political participation created a void in Kashmir's political sphere and raised many questions on New Delhi's claims of normalcy in the region. And to break the ice, amid tough security measures, New Delhi is holding local elections in 8 phases, ending on December 19th. A large number of voters has braved cold weather to vote, and each of them has their own reasons.
Our educated youth are doing menial jobs. We have problems like improper roads and lack of electricity. Who will take up our issues to higher-ups? That's why we voted for our trusted candidate.
Election boycott calls in past by the pro-independence camp of Kashmir were highly supported by the people of Kashmir. But this time they say they want to fight for equality and justice via elections. While voters have their own reasons to cast ballots, candidates have their aims too.
I can't promise my people jobs and land rights because with Article 370 everything is gone. My goal is to safeguard my people against the plots of people with anti-Muslim agendas. I believe in peace and tranquility and I want to work for secularism in my block.
The main contesting parties in this local election are Bharatiya Janata Party, Indian National Congress and Alliance of Local Political Parties.
Amid heightened security, the elections in Indian-administered Kashmir are being portrayed by many as a step towards normalcy and peace in the region. However, experts say such electoral processes have hardly helped Kashmir in the past, adding long-lasting peace is only possible when the issue gets permanently resolved between India and Pakistan. Shahana Bhatt, Indian-administered Kashmir.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of first to six. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
We
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this cool, pretty Sunday, November 29th, 2020. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails and letters. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our programs. Or if you have any messages for our listeners around the world, then record your voice and send it to us and get your voice heard. Dear friends, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Keep us company until the end of the program. You're listening to the Sunday program, Listeners Special. And as you may know, many of you may have the problem of sending us reception reports. As you may know, these reception reports are very useful and important to us in IRIB English Radio. These reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service to our listeners throughout the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will normally receive a QSL card from us in IRIB English Radio. However, these days with the outbreak of coronavirus pandemic around the world, please don't expect a QSL card from IRIB English Radio. As you may know, sending any material on behalf of our radio is temporarily halted, unfortunately, due to the coronavirus pandemic. We hope that this disease is controlled very soon, and then we can get back on track and send you paper QSL cards and souvenirs of IRIB English Radio. And here I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Maurizio Vecchi from Italy, M. Abdulrazak from India, and João Carlos El Caputo, one of our regular listeners from Brazil. Maurizio, M. Abdulrazak, and João Carlos El Caputo, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And a million thanks to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us emails and letters, which I mentioned some of the names here, including Serge Till from Luxembourg, Hemant Kumar, one of our regular listeners from India, Olmar Kvik from Sweden, who is also one of our regular listeners, Nils Lashbrook from the United States, and Sutomo Huang from Indonesia. Thanks a lot for these kind letters and emails. Dear listeners, stay with us until the end of the program. I will be back with all these kind messages just in seconds after the music. Welcome back. Here we have an email from Sweden. This email is from Olmar Kvik from Sweden. Olmar is one of our regular listeners who says, "Dear friends, it's a pleasure to observe the efforts made by IRIB English Radio to improve the audio quality of the transmission. The recent days have shown such an improvement that the listeners, with some skill and effort, by adjusting the receivers to the best bandwidth and sideband can follow your transmissions. It is really not perfect, but the improvement is clear. I want to tell you that I listen to IRIB English Radio on the web with Iranian music and listeners special. This, of course, with perfect audio quality. The website iransera.ir seems to be working, but many other sites are unfortunately unusable. As always, a confirmation of my report will be welcome, and it can favorably be sent by email. From Sweden, where the fallen leaves are falling on the ground, days are often gloomy and cloudy. My kind regards to you and your colleagues. First of all, greetings to you from Iran and IRB English Radio, Omar Kuvik from Sweden, and thanks a lot for writing to us. It seems that you are satisfied with the audio quality of the transmission, and that's all we want in IRB English Radio, to provide the best quality of broadcast, signals, transmission, audio, and programs to our dear listeners around the world. May the best days in your life come very soon. Stay safe and healthy during the pandemic. And let the warm signals of IRIB English Radio fill your time at home during these gloomy days, as you said, the gloomy days of autumn and winter, and also during the lockdowns. Anyway, we're looking forward to hearing from you very soon in your upcoming emails. Tell us which programs you like the best. Here we have an email from Luxembourg. This email is from Serge Till from Luxembourg. Serge says, "Dear Madam or Sir, few days ago I listened to your programs on SW frequency. I live in Colmarburg in the center of the Grand Duchy of Luxembourg. Can you please send me a classical QSL card, not an EQSL? Thank you in advance and stay in good health. Greetings from Iran and IRB English Radio to Luxembourg and to Serge Till." Serge Till from Luxembourg, it seems that you've already joined us in IRB English Radio. You're so glad that signals of IRB English Radio is heard in different parts of the world, including in Luxembourg. And regarding your request about sending classical QSL card, or paper QSL card or EQSL card, I have to mention that, as we have said during our programs, sending any material on behalf of IRIB English Radio or any souvenirs or promotional items, including postcards, is temporarily halted due to the outbreak of coronavirus. So please be patient. But this mutual relationship between us and you in IRIB English Radio is, we hope that this relationship goes on. And don't forget to tell us your views about our programs during your upcoming emails to IRIB English Radio. Thanks a lot for writing to us, Serge Till from Luxembourg. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon in the future. Dear listeners, after a short break, we will be back with all emails and letters from around the world. Stay tuned. Welcome back. Here we have an email from Hemant Kumar from India. Dr. Hemant Kumar is one of our regular listeners who says, "Radio is a powerful medium for celebrating humanity in all of its diversity and constitutes a platform for democratic discourse. At the global level, radio remains the most widely consumed medium. This unique ability to reach out the widest audience means radio can shape a society's experience of diversity, stand as an arena for all voices to speak out, be represented and heard. In my opinion, radio stations should serve diverse communities, offer a wide variety of programs, viewpoints, and content, and reflect the diversity of audiences in their organizations and operations. Greetings to you from Iran, Dr. Hemant Kumar from India, one of our regular listeners, and lots of gratitude for writing to us. So once again, this was another wonderful email from one of our regular listeners, Dr. Hemant Kumar, and it was really a wonderful description of radio, as you said. It's a powerful medium for celebrating humanity in all its diversity, and it also constitutes a platform for democratic discourse. Thanks a lot. It was a really nice description of radio. In your view, Dr. Hemant Kumar from India, write to us very soon and tell us your views about our broadcast in IRIB English Radio. And from the United States, we have an email from Niels Lashbrook. Niels Lashbrook says, "Hello to all staff. I would love to get a paper QSL card if that is possible. Secondly, I would appreciate if you could send a broadcast schedule of some sort to me as well, so I can know when to tune in. Best regards, Niels." Niels Lashbrook from the US, hello, and thank you for writing to IRIB English Radio. At your request about sending promotional items, including QSL cards or paper QSL cards or broadcast schedule, here I mentioned for several times that in our radio, we used to send our dear listeners around the world the paper QSL cards as well as souvenirs and promotional items of our radio. But unfortunately, with the outbreak of coronavirus, this tradition halted. And we hope that soon in the future, after the disease is controlled around the world, we can get back on this track and send our dear listeners paper QSL cards and promotional items. And about the broadcast schedule, you can refer to our website at www.parstoday.com/en, and there you can find our broadcast schedule. Anyway, Niels, write to us soon and tell us which programs you like the best in IRIB English Radio. We're looking forward to hearing from you very soon in the future. Stay safe and healthy. Dear listeners, what about a short break? Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and we have an email from Indonesia. This is from Stumo Huang. Stumo Huang says, "I'm glad to inform you that I'm enjoying your interesting and informative programs regularly. The reception of Radio IRIB English Service is very good here in Indonesia. Please try to send me some hard copies of QSL cards, postcards, and some radio souvenirs, etc. With very best wishes and best regards." First of all, greetings from Iran and IRIB English Radio to you in Indonesia, Stumo Huang, and thank you for writing to us. Seeing that our listeners around the world are pleased and satisfied with the quality of the programs and the signal and the audio makes us more strengthened and resolved in continue our path in IRIB English Radio. And as you said, you've requested promotional items, but as we have mentioned several times, sending any item like QSL cards, postcards, and radio souvenirs will be resumed after the COVID-19 disease is controlled. For the time being, we keep this mutual relationship going. You listen to IRIB English Radio broadcast, and you can send us emails and letters, and you can tell us your views about our broadcast. You can tell us your views about the quality of our programs, and we reflect your views in Listeners Special. Anyway, many thanks for writing to us, Stumo Huang from Indonesia. We're looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Thank you. And I think time tells me that here we have to skip to a section of this week's interview, which is conducted with one of our regular listeners. Please take a listen.
Hello there. Hello, everybody in Iran. I hope everybody's okay out there. My name is Adam Santa. I'm from Leicester in England. I am a frequent listener of IRIB. I've been tuning in on the shortwave for about a year now and again, and as I get time. I enjoy the show. I enjoy the content. It's a very interesting show. I enjoy hearing about the listeners from around the world. And I hope that everybody is doing well this summer. I think the content is pretty good. I particularly like the interview segments. It's quite interesting when you get people from different parts of the world there. It's quite interesting to hear their perspective on things, simply because we don't really get that on in any other format, really. It's one of the things I enjoy about shortwave radio is that you can guarantee that sooner or later you're going to pick up a station that has some kind of different perspective on things. So it's quite interesting to do that. Yeah, I would just like to say around the world, I hope you're doing well. Continue listening to IRIB because they're doing a great job. Keep in contact with them. Keep the shortwaves active. I know that the shortwaves aren't exactly as busy as they used to be, so we need to keep that going. And I hope everybody is doing well.
Just heard a piece of nice Iranian music, and here we come to the end of this week's edition of Listeners Special. Many thanks for being with us, and goodbye.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
the debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Iran has condemned the terrorist attack against its top nuclear scientist, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, and says his killing will not go unanswered. This week, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo had flown to Saudi Arabia to see strongman Mohammed bin Salman, and during the previous week had visited Israel. Tehran says Tel Aviv is behind the assassination. Stay with us as we look at the possible players in this terrorist attack.
The assassination of Iran's top nuclear scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh has caused outrage in the country, with officials blaming Israel for the terrorist attacks and pledging retaliation. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani called Fakhrizadeh's assassination a proof of enemies' desperation.
This terrorist act indicates the enemy's failures in political fronts in the region as well as across the world. The assassination of the scientist suggests the extent of enemy's malice and garage toward Iran's scientific capabilities and achievements. The killing of figures like Fakhrizadeh will not weaken Iran's will to move toward scientific development and progress. Rather, it makes Iranians more resolute in their path.
Chief of Staff of the Iranian Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Bagheri, said harsh revenge awaits the terrorist elements and all those behind the assassination. Chief of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, Major General Hossein Salami, said retaliation and harsh punishment for the perpetrators are already on the agenda. Salami said the terrorist act was plotted and directed by the Israeli regime. In a tweet, Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif said there were serious indications of an Israeli role in the assassination. Fakhrizadeh's name was mentioned multiple times in a 2018 presentation by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, where he repeated Tel Aviv's baseless allegations against Tehran's nuclear program.
A key part of the plan was to form new organizations to continue the work. This is how Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, head of Project Ahmad, put it. Remember that name, Fakhrizadeh.
The New York Times also quoted three intelligence officials as saying that Israel was behind the terrorist attack. Hossein Dehghan, a military advisor to the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, said Israel is seeking to intensify pressure on Iran with the aim of provoking a full-fledged war. The former defense minister said Iran will descend like lightning on the killers of the country's scientists and will make them regret their actions. The head of the Iranian judiciary's High Council for Human Rights said Fakhrizadeh's assassination was aimed at hindering the country's scientific progress.
What is noteworthy from my point of view about the assassination attempt made today in Tehran was that there is a serious will by the Iranians' enemy to prevent the improvement and advancement of the Iranian people. They are going to put hurdles on our way.
Fakhrizadeh was also leading a team tasked with developing one of Iran's first kits for coronavirus diagnosis. The plot to assassinate him was not the first, as he had survived several such attempts in the past years. Four other Iranian nuclear scientists were assassinated between 2010 and 2012, with Tehran and Western intelligence agencies blaming Israel for those killings. The Israeli terror campaign has been widely seen as a project to stymie Iran's peaceful nuclear activities, which have been under the intense scrutiny of the International Atomic Energy Agency.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, journalist and commentator Leif Maruf, out of Beirut, and peace and justice activist and analyst Arbaz Ruhollah Rezvi, out of Qom. Thank you both for being with us. Let's start this off in Beirut. Leif, who do you think is actually responsible for this terrorist attack?
Well, we don't have definite proof, but we have fingerprints of those who did it, and we know that the apartheid Israel has been targeting the nuclear program of Iran for more than a decade now. We have heard the comments of the Prime Minister of Apartheid Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, a couple of years ago, specifically naming Professor Fakhrizadeh as one of the targets that they are going after. And we have seen that the collaboration between Apartheid Israel and Mujahideen Khalq that are stationed in France and Albania and have been receiving huge amounts of support by the United States and European powers along with Apartheid Israel. So all of these are the main culprits that are the suspects for this dreadful assassination. And we can add on top of them Saudi-occupied Arabia and the meeting that happened between MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, and Netanyahu and Pompeo just days before this assassination.
Sadwas Ruhollah, during the almost 42 years since the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, we've seen many actions against the country. Terrorist attacks against nuclear scientists are just one of those actions. Why do you think that this is the case? What's the bottom line? What are Iran's enemies after by doing these type of acts?
Referring back to your first question, I think analytically it's very clear that who is behind all these acts of terrorism in Iran. Looking again back to the series of terror attacks between 2010 and 2012, in which four prominent Iranian scientists were assassinated, this, after, of course, a gap of 8 years, is another act of terror analytically proven done by the Zionists, not based on the data, but based on the analysis. It's quite clear, and all the analysis across the globe will confess that the only regime that can benefit from these sorts of acts against Iranian scientists is the Zionist regime. So it's very clear. But there is one important point that, because someone said that, okay, there's something between Iran and Israel, and that's why Israel is making targeting Iranian scientists. But let's go to the roots of the problem in Iran and Israel. Iran, initially speaking, if you look at it from the perspective of a country, if you look at it from the perspective of a nation state, it has nothing to do with Israel. No borders there, nothing is related to Iran and Israel. But there is just only one point, which is from the perspective of the Iranian Revolution. That is the issue of occupied Palestine and Jerusalem and the refugees in the case of Palestine. So going to the core of this issue, the conflict between Iran and Israel, is something related to the issue of Palestine. Because I see so many commentators, so many observers are ignoring this part of the story. This is all because of Palestine. What Iran is paying now, the price that Iran is paying now, exactly the time that the Arab regimes are looking after normalization of their ties and making benefit of their connection with the Zionists as well as the Americans, based on the connection, based on the normalization of ties with Zionists. They are looking after their profits and benefits, but at the same time, Iran is paying the price of defending the issue of Palestine. Unless, if you look at it, as I mentioned at the very beginning, from the perspective of a nation state as Iran, and if you forget about the Iranian Revolution, there's nothing between Iran and Israel. There were relations between Iran and Israel before that. Look at the 70s, look at the 60s. Iran was on the side of the Israelis during the Arab-Israeli War, during the Shah time, but it was the revolution, 1979 revolution, that started a new trend between Iran and Israel, and Iran decided against it.
All right. Iran has experienced 40 years of sanctions, the luring of its academics to the U.S. and other Western countries, and even its scientists imprisoned in the U.S. after they insisted that their research be recorded as being done by an Iranian scientist instead of as an American. Why is there such sensitivity by some Western and regional entities about Iran's academic achievements?
Well, because Iran and the rest of the world are supposed to be just servants for Western imperialism. Any state that attempts to be independent, sovereign in its academic, in its technological, in its military abilities, it is a target for the West. And this is what has been the most important achievement of the Islamic Revolution in 1979, that it was able to turn Iran under all these extreme pressures of wars, of sanctions, and of blockades of the country, to turn it into a powerhouse of education, of technology, of science, and to be sovereign in those choices and be able to achieve and deliver on its basic needs of technology, of electricity, of energy, of defense. And, you know, we have to keep in mind here today, this assassination of this great scientist, it does not come out of the blue. As mentioned before, there was assassinations in 2010 and 2012 of Iranian nuclear scientists, and those assassinations happened under the regime of Obama. So right now we have a change happening in the United States. Some people are wishing or wishful thinking that Biden is going to change anything. But remember, it was Obama who started this practice of assassinating scientists in Iran. Trump is just continuing it, and definitely Biden will also.
Well, Laith, you brought up an interesting topic that I want to get into a little bit later, but now that you've brought it up, you talked about that basically it doesn't matter if it's a Democrat or a Republican in the White House. Their policy in dealing with Iran, one, and dealing with Israel is basically the same. I want to look at that side of things. And Sarwaz Ruhollah, you alluded a little bit earlier that the bottom line of all of this is Iran's stance in dealing with Palestine. Put all of this together, and how do you see this overall sensitivity that Washington has for Tel Aviv and what seems to be this disdain for the Islamic Republic of Iran?
You know the problem. You know, there are different issues, different cases between Iran and the United States of America from the very beginning of the Iranian Revolution. But it is one very crystal clear issue between Iran and America. That is Palestine. Iran is definite in supporting and standing with the Palestinians and to liberate the Palestinian occupied lands. And the United States of America also, be them Democrats or Republicans, no difference, are very clear to be in support of the Zionist regime. This is the red line for both. I mean, the red line for Iran is Palestine, and the red line for the American regime and the United States of America, whoever is going to rule the country, it doesn't make any difference, is to support the security of, as they say, so-called security of the Zionist regime. So that is the clash point, actually, between Iran and the United States of America. And as it was mentioned, Joe Biden also very clear in defending the so-called security of Israel and having no tolerance against so-called resistant, what they call it, the terrorist groups, and also from our perspective, the resistant groups. So this is that bottom line. And don't forget, there is a theory of trap. Regarding this assassination taking place, some believe that it is a trap because Biden is coming, most possibly, and if Iran is going to react, the consequences could be very, very bad for Iran. That's why it is a trap for Iran and to trigger Iran, to stimulate Iran, that Iran will come and react. But I believe that this analysis, this theory of trap analysis for what took place in the assassination, is totally wasted. I don't believe in that because the first issue is that the one who is behind the assassination is Zionist regime itself. It's not a matter of the assassination. It's not a matter of the martyrdom of the General Soleimani, which was done directly by the Americans. This act of terror was done, we believe, analytically, was done directly by the operation of Mossad, as it was done before. So this is the first point. So if Iran is going to react, the target of Iran possibly is Israel.
Well, let me just jump in here. Sarbaz Ruhollah, you said it was Mossad. But do you think that the United States was also involved, or do you think that they had previous information about this attack?
I have no comment on that. But the point is that the Zionist regime has always mentioned that they are looking after their targets inside Iran. And if they find any opportunity, I don't believe that they are going to postpone their, act of their evil act of terror inside Iran. So the recent case, they have been looking at, as was mentioned by Netanyahu 2 years ago in 2018, that Fakhrizadeh, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, was their target from years before. And he was assassinated. There were different attempts of assassinations as well. I believe that Zionists, if they find their targets, if they find any possibility of targeting any scientist, anyone who is a prominent person in the progress, in the scientific progress of Iran, they will not lose their opportunity and
okay.
they will do no. I have no on the information, the possible information of the American side or not, but I'm sure that whenever they find the opportunity, they will do their evil job.
All right, well, Leith, what about that? Do you think that the terrorist attacks, like the one yesterday, is actually a sign of weakness of a regime initiating the attack, and that it's a desperate attempt to try to create chaos and disruption in Iran's progress?
Definitely. You could see in the last few years how apartheid Israel and the United States itself have realized that their power is waning, and they are not able to achieve much with all the tools that they have used before. They are also not able to go into a direct war with even somebody as small as Hezbollah in Lebanon with around 30, 40,000 fighters. So what has happened in the last year with the assassination of Martyr General Soleimani and al-Muhandis, and now the assassination of Fakhrizadeh, is them trying to show that they have an ability somehow to harm the progress of Iran and the resistance axis in general. One thing that we have to point out here is that, whether Biden comes into power in January or not, there will be no change in the process of how the United States views Iran. My colleague spoke about the red line of apartheid Israel. It is because apartheid Israel is the only thing that guarantees the supremacy of the United States in the Western Asia and North Africa region. Without that existing, it naturally all the Arab people will unify no matter what stands in their way other than apartheid Israel. So what we have here is an existential issue. Palestine and the liberation of Palestine are existential for us as Arabs, as Muslims in the region, and it's also an existential issue for white supremacy and imperialism in a global scale, not only in control of our region. And things are coming into a head there. And we know that even those who give up on Palestine or give up their weapons, let's say like Gaddafi the regimes in Egypt and others, they don't get anything in return. In fact, they get killed as Gaddafi got killed. So Iran, Syria, Hezbollah, Yemen, they have learned the lesson that you have to stand on your principles and you have to fight back, because even if you give in to the empire doesn't want you to be an equal.
Okay, well, Sarbaz Ruhollah, now some Western countries are calling for restraint. What does that exactly mean when they're asking Tehran to restrain itself after such a terrorist attack, and when at the same time Tehran can definitely expect nothing from the so-called international community as far as actually doing something against the perpetrators?
Yes, as I mentioned, it's based on an illusion that they think that if Iran is not going to react on what place, and there are opportunities for JCPOA being once again on the track after the new government in the United States of America. But as it was mentioned, there is no any fundamental and substantial difference between what's going on in between Iran and the United States of America by the changes of the governments inside the United States of America. But But I believe there is one important point that should be followed. Sorry to to shift a little bit because I want to mention this important point. I believe that there should be a legal reaction on behalf of the Iranian side, because let's not forget that